I got a new phone this week.
Oh yeah, is this one from another sketchy Chinese company?
No. The Huawei era is over. That phone took some abuse this past week. Within about 24 hours, I got it wet and then dropped it on a hardwood floor. And then I was trying to dry it out in a bag of rice, and I forgot that it was on my car, and it just flew off into the street.
Nice.
I had to get a new phone, but this is not a purchase of necessity podcast. Welcome to season 6, episode 24, the season finale of Cinema Chop Shop.
Woo!
This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs
like us
decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is
Trav Vertigo, aka Dial T for Travis.
I love it. That is awesome. And I am joined remotely once again by my co-host and co-producer, Suspicion, aka the Sean who knew too much, aka Stranger Sean a Train. We are also extremely excited to welcome back to the show our regular guest, Chellbound, aka Chell Secret Agent.
Nice.
Very nice. I like that one.
Further description of the show, the tagline says watch, chop, retrofit, because that's what we do here. We watch older movies, sometimes classic films with iconic actors, and I dare say that is the case today. We've got some classics and not a tire fire amongst them. And then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts. And a disclaimer, we're not actually in favor of remakes, reboots, sequels, and the dependency on them. This is more of an exercise in satire and irony. We try to be funny.
And sometimes we succeed.
All right. So this is the point of the show where I have to ask you guys a question. And Sean, I think you've got an answer for me. Can you point out an example of a bad or unnecessary remake?
Unnecessary remake, not necessarily a bad one. The second, The Man Who Knew Too Much, directed by Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, because he remade his own movie.
He sure did. And he changed up the story, which I'll discuss later.
Okay. My example, you said you did not have one, right, Chelsea?
Nope, I don't have one.
Okay. So my example is going to be that the 2013 remake of Carrie is not as good as the original Brian De Palma version from, what was it, 76?
Somewhere in that vicinity.
But I did find out in looking at this that the remake starred, oh shit, what is her name? Well, it had Julianne Moore, but also the girl is well known, and the kid is Ansel Elgort.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Who we just talked about. So one of his earlier performances.
It's Chloe Grace Moretz, by the way.
Chloe Grace Moretz, thank you. So even despite those three people, not a good remake and unnecessary at that. Which brings us to our next segment, which is going to be movie news. And it's going to be a lighter week on the movie news. Not too much crazy going on with everything kind of still slowly ramping back up, I guess. We do have an RIP, though, this week. And that is that actor and comedian Jerry Stiller has died of natural causes, his son Ben Stiller says.
Yep, that's a sad one.
Yeah.
And we'll mention it later, but one of the funny stories I always remember about Ben Stiller talking about his dad is the first time that he took psychedelics. And in a rookie move, he called his dad, but his dad was cool and he kind of, you know, guided him through. Next up, we've got the Hamilton movie is getting released a year early on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
So if it was ready, why were they holding on to it?
I personally think that Disney was banking on the popularity of its Disney Plus service. And once they saw people jumping ship after they finished watching The Mandalorian, they said, we got to get something to hook them back in.
Mandalorian was so good. Drink.
So good.
Next, this is a headline that's movie news adjacent. And you sent me this link. It says, GaryBuseyPetJudge.com.
Yep.
And so apparently there's going to be a new Gary Busey headed project. What is it all about?
It's on Amazon Prime, and as the trailer says, is Gary Busey a judge? Nope. No. Does Gary Busey know anything about pet law?
Probably not. But he's apparently not going to stop him, and that's exactly the type of quarantine entertainment I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, this ranks right up there with Tiger King.
Yes. Oh, they need to bring in Busey for Tiger King. Alongside Nick Cage.
Oh, yeah.
The next Mad Max movie, and this is kind of a confirmation and an update, the next Mad Max movie will be a prequel about Furiosa, but Charlize Theron will not be reprising the role.
That's right. I guess they're setting it early in her life.
Right.
And so they're going to have to find a new Furiosa.
All right. So with that, I think I furiously hear the phone ringing. And that means it must be time for the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
Hiya, Choppers. Riff is Tony's best friend and the leader of the Jets. I named Sean's pick for Tony before he did. Why? Because I'm such a hype nerdophile. George Chakiris is, in fact, of Greek descent. Big Mouth Billy Bass was first sold in January 1999 and was at the height of its power in the early 2000s. I tell you, between this episode and watching the Google Doodle from his 93rd birthday, I'm getting inspired to catch some delicious bass films. Catch you next week.
All right. Thank you, Dana, for that. I really don't have any witty banter, but we do appreciate all of your hard work. And it sounds like you might have had a visit from the Punisher. And that will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department. So that brings us to the theme of the episode. It's not because of his birthday or the date of his passing away, but I just kind of had a idea that we should do an Alfred Hitchcock episode. So I had to find a date that would line up somewhat with the calendar date. You know how that's way too important to me.
Right.
May 18th marks the 66th anniversary of the premiere screening of Dial M for Murder. So for the season 6 finale, we will be discussing the films of Alfred Hitchcock. So quick breakdown of his bio. And like I said, I will go through this fairly quickly. But he was born in Leytonstone, Essex in England. His parents leased a grocery shop and they lived above it, a la Bob's Burgers. He was a well-behaved child, and his father called him his little lamb without a spot. Even despite that, when he was 5 years old, his father sent him down to the local police station with a note. The police officer read the note and put him in the jail cell for 5 minutes before letting him out and saying, "This is what happens to naughty boys."
Wow.
And it gave him a lifelong fear of police and almost a disdain for authority. He was an average to above average student. He went to school first for engineering, and then later for art. He entered the film industry in 1919 as a title card designer, speaking of last week's episode, after training as a technical clerk and copywriter for a telegraph cable company. He made his directorial debut with a British-German silent film called The Pleasure Garden in 1925, but his first successful film, the movie that he considered his first success, was The Lodger, A Story of the London Fog in 1927. He also, in 1929, his film Blackmail was the first British talkie. Talkie, 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 talkie! By 1939, Hitchcock was a filmmaker of international importance, and film producer David O. Selznick persuaded him to move to Hollywood. A string of successful films followed, including Rebecca in 1940, which won the Academy Award for Best Picture. The Hitchcockian style is a thing among cinemaphiles and people who study film. It includes the use of a camera movement to mimic a person's gaze, thereby turning the viewer into a voyeur.
Right.
After a brief lull in his success in the 40s, he returned to form with Strangers on a Train in 1951 and Dial M for Murder in 1954. By 1960, Hitchcock had directed four films often ranked among the greatest of all time, including Rear Window, Vertigo, North by Northwest, and Psycho. And in 2012, Vertigo replaced Orson Welles' Citizen Kane on BFI's list of the greatest films ever made, based on a worldwide poll of hundreds of film critics. By 2018, eight of his films have been selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry, including his personal favorite, Shadow of a Doubt, from 1943. He received the BAFTA Fellowship in 1971, the AFI Life Achievement Award in 1979, and was knighted in December that year, 4 months before he died of renal failure. And that is as fast as I can break down the career of Alfred Hitchcock. What do you guys think?
I think you overlooked only one thing, and that was the motif of him appearing in his own films.
Oh, yeah. In almost every film, right?
I think so. I don't know when he started.
Yeah, I don't either.
Also, we should mention his TV show.
Yes, Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
And that was so important to me as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
By the time that show came around, he was popular with film aficionados, but he got mainstream recognition from that show because it's TV.
Right.
So with that being said, let's go to our next segment, which is going to be the Midnight Double Feature. And this is where each of us on the panel select two films that are within our subject, and we talk about why they are a good pairing to be shown together, like a double feature. And Chelsea, as our guest, you get to go first.
Hooray. Both of my films are from 1954.
Okay.
And one of them I watched for the Grace Kelly episode, and that's Dial M for Murder.
Nice.
And I'm pairing that with Rear Window.
Uh-huh.
And it was so funny. I just caught the end of Rear Window probably an hour before we started recording. And Dial M for Murder takes place in England in the Chelsea neighborhood.
Ha!
Rear Window takes place in New York City in Chelsea.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know. I thought that was great.
That's some synchronicity.
They're both great. They're a lot of fun. I enjoyed both of them. Everybody should watch them.
Nice. Solid recommends. How about Sean? What did you pick this week?
I went with two of his earlier works when he was still based in England. Went with 1934's The Man Who Knew Too Much. As I mentioned earlier, this is the first of Alfred Hitchcock's two The Man Who Knew Too Much movies.
Second one starred Bill Murray, right?
Right. No, that's The Man Who Knew Too Little.
Oh.
I wanted to watch that this week just for kicks, but I did not. This stars Leslie Banks in the lead role with Edna Best and Peter Lorre in his first English-speaking role.
Okay.
Now, he'd been in silent films, you know, before then, and foreign films, but this is his first English speaker. It is the story of about a man and his wife. They receive a clue about an imminent assassination attempt.
Okay.
And they learn that their daughter has been kidnapped to keep them quiet. And this is kind of like an introduction into Alfred Hitchcock's obsession with espionage and intrigue. Uh-huh. And so the main character, played by Leslie Banks, is kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. But the reason I really love this film is that they surprise you at the end. And I'm going to spoil a film from 1934. It's the wife, Edna Best, who is the hero in the end of this movie. They come to the resolution about who these bad guys are, and their child in the first version is their daughter is out on a roof ledge and being chased by Peter Lorre's character, and the cops are across the street, you know, trying to negotiate or pick off the bad guys, and the police chief's like, you know, take the shot, and the cop's like, no, I can't, I'll hit the little girl. The wife takes the rifle from the police officer and shoots Peter Lorre.
Wow.
It was so cool. It was like one of those fuck yeah moments. And, you know, a very woman empowered kind of role at a, in a very early era. So I really like that. And I'm following it up with the 39 Steps. It's 1935. Stars some actors you probably not heard of very much. Robert Donat, not Donut, Donat, Madeline Carroll, and Lucy Mannheim. It's about a man in London. He tries to help a counter-espionage agent. He basically kind of stumbles into this role. The agent is killed, and the man stands accused of killing the agent, and he has to go on the run to save himself and stop a spy ring, which is trying to steal top-secret information. And the name of the insidious cell, I guess you'd call it, are the 39 Steps. And this one's pretty cool. This one, again, really gets into Hitchcock's obsession with intrigue and espionage.
I was going to say from the title, I thought it might be about my third stint in rehab.
Well, that's what I said in my review. It sounds like the world's longest rehab program, but it's not.
Nice. Great minds. Great minds. All right, I'll go quick with mine. I picked two Alfred Hitchcock movies that star Jimmy Stewart. They are about or exactly 10 years apart. And the first one is called Rope. It's got a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. Just before hosting a dinner party, Philip Morgan, played by Farley Granger, and Brandon Shaw, played by John Dahl, strangle a mutual friend to death with a piece of rope, purely as a Nietzsche-inspired philosophical exercise. Hiding the body in a chest upon which they arrange a buffet dinner, the pair welcome their guests, including the victim's oblivious fiancé, played by Joan Chandler, and the college professor, played by Jimmy Stewart, whose lectures inadvertently inspired the killing. It was beautifully shot. It was suspenseful because he, throughout the course of the dinner party, Jimmy Stewart starts to get suspicious. And it also dealt with a lot of taboo things for the time. The play that it was inspired by, the two main characters are in an overtly homosexual relationship, and they just kind of allude to it a little bit in the film version.
Oh, my.
And the next one we already talked about, we already mentioned it, it's 1958's Vertigo. Of course, you've got the amazing title sequence by Saul Bass. It's got a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. And we've got an ex-police officer who suffers from an intense fear of heights and is hired to prevent an old friend's wife from committing suicide. But all is not as it seems. Hitchcock's haunting, compelling masterpiece is uniquely revelatory and widely considered to be one of his masterworks. One of the things that I liked about this is it plays on those themes of doubles and people impersonating other people and mistaken identity.
Yes, he used it to great effect in this one, and Kim Novak was fantastic.
Very much so. So yeah, that's going to be my double feature, and I'm of course going to go recommend on both of them.
Oh, recommends on mine.
Goes without saying. Yeah. I think these are all probably going to be recommends, and I recommend you hang on with us into our next segment, which is the recast. This is where we take a specific film and we watch it ahead of time and we try to think about it a little bit. And then just for shits and giggles, we hypothetically recast a few of the main roles that are, with contemporary actors. And the first one that we're going to recast is Strangers on a Train from 1951. We got a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. And had either of you seen this before?
I haven't, no.
No, it was new for me.
New for me as well. But it is a story that's been parodied a lot in other media, especially as episodes in various TV shows. The old murder swap. So in this adaptation of Patricia Highsmith's thriller, tennis star Guy Haines, once again played by Farley Granger, is enraged. I almost said engraved. I was like, damn. It's getting gory already, by his trampy wife's refusal to finalize their divorce so he can wed the senator's daughter, played by Ruth Roman, and her name's Anne Morton, and he strikes up a conversation with a stranger named Bruno Anthony on the train, and Bruno Anthony is played by Robert Walker, and unwittingly sets into motion a deadly chain of events. Psychopathic Bruno kills Guy's wife, then urges Guy to reciprocate by killing Bruno's father. Meanwhile, Guy is murder suspect number one. Is that about sum it up?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there is one character we should mention.
And, oh, yes, the murderino.
Well, there's that, but there's another character. But go ahead and talk about the murderino, though, because I think that she stole the show.
So the character we're referring to is the younger sister of Ann Morton. Her name in the movie is Barbara Morton, and she's played by Alfred Hitchcock's only child, Patricia, or Pat Hitchcock, who was 23 at the time. And then who's the other character that we have to mention?
It was Smokey Joe.
Oh, God.
the old coot who crawled underneath the carousel.
Oh, that guy was awesome. He's like, hold on, there's a break underneath here. I'm just going to crawl on under here. And then that scene was pretty awesome, though, with the carousel spinning out of control.
He selflessly went under there, but he did a pretty terrible job of stopping the carousel.
Yeah, it flies off the rails.
Seriously, though, I was like, I'm Smokey Joe.
Maybe there's some gold under here. All right, so the roles. We've got Guy Haines, played by Farley Granger. We've got Barbara Morton, the murderino, played by Patricia Hitchcock. And she's always cluing people into what people's actual motives probably are. She's, if there's smoke, there's fire type of mentality. Then we've got Bruno Anthony, the psychopath that Guy meets on the train, who proposes this whole murder exchange. And finally, we've got the love interest of Guy Haines, played by Ruth Roman. Her name was Ann Morton. Right?
That correct. Is correct.
All right, so let's start with that first one, the main tennis guy. He's gonna be on the senior tour in my recast. Chelsea, who did you pick for Guy Haines?
So my actor's 28, and he was in Glee, some movie called Everybody Wants Some.
Oh yeah,
I know him from The Edge of 17 as the older brother. It's okay. Blake Jenner. I wanted somebody that was like good looking, athletic, just like your all American boy.
What was the middle movie that you said?
Everybody Wants Some.
Yeah, Everybody Wants Some is Richard Linklater. It's
yeah,
kind of
I haven't seen it.
Unofficial sequel to Dazed and Confused.
He plays Jake.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So incidentally, Guy Haines, after his tennis career, he went on to found a line of sports briefs. So, Sean, it's your turn, I believe. Guy Haines?
Yeah. My actor is from Israel. And I'm just
going to. That was a really dramatic pause there.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm just collecting my thoughts. He is 26 years old, mm-hmm. and you'll know him or not know him from Orange is the New Black, Less Than Zero, the newer version, TV movie version, Dead of Summer. But he's in the TV series 911 Lone Star. His name is Ronan Rubinstein.
Okay, cool. 911 Lone Star?
Yeah, like 911 and then Lone Star.
So it's yet another spinoff of the 911 franchise.
I think so.
That's awesome. I hope that Walker Texas Ranger gets to make a cameo. All right, well, as I mentioned, my actor is considerably older. He's 45 now. And he was in one of my favorite movies, Garden State. He was in The Last Kiss. He was in I Wish I Was Here. And he was JD on Scrubs. It's Zach Braff.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, it'll make a little bit more sense later.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what you're doing with this.
I don't know where you're going.
All right. Next up, we've got Barbara Morton, played by Pat Hitchcock, and she was 23 at the time. Chelsea?
My actress is 24. She was in Justified, the Netflix series Unbelievable, and Booksmart. I went with Caitlin Dever.
Okay, yeah, yeah. She's awesome. Man, that Booksmart movie was so good.
So good.
Sounds good. Sean?
So we're doing Barbara first, is that right?
Yes. Yes.
See, I really wanted to cast Georgia Hardstark because she is the murderino. Uh-huh. And there were scenes in that movie where Patricia Hitchcock was even making expressions that reminded me of Georgia.
Yeah, a little bit.
The age was completely out of whack. So I went with somebody who I think would be obsessed with murder based on some of the roles I've seen her in. She was in the Disney series So Random, as well as Sunny with a Chance. She was in King of California, but she got on my radar with the TV series AP Bio as the nerd Heather with a little twisted slant. Her name is Allison Snyder.
Yes.
I like AP Bio. I'm having trouble picturing the character, but that sounds good.
She's the one that had the Coke bottle glasses that kind of set back in the back, but she was all...
Yeah, okay.
But she was always down for whatever the teacher was proposing. She's like, oh yeah, I'm behind that.
My Barbara Morton is 43 now. She was on Roseanne, where she played the role of Becky, one of the Beckys. She's got a voice on Rick and Morty, and she was on Scrubs. Her name is Sarah Chalk.
I think it's Chalky.
I went back and forth on how to pronounce it, and I just decided to say Chalk.
Now she's the mom on Rick and Morty, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yep.
Love it.
Next up, we've got Bruno, and I'm not talking about toilet wine. Bruno Anthony, played by Robert Walker. Is it Anthony or Anthony? And does it matter?
They say Anthony in the movie.
Yeah. Okay. Like Mark Antony. Yeah.
The singer.
He struck me as being kind of sexually ambiguous.
That's what I was going to say. There's an androgyny there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, at the very least, a unnecessary familiarity. Like he sits right down.
Yeah.
Classic Metro.
Yeah, very Metro. Very good. He was a boy of privilege.
Yes.
All right. So who is your pick for Bruno, Chelsea?
My actor is 33. Uh-huh. And he was in X-Men, Kick-Ass, most notably on American Horror Story, because I think he can sort of play this androgynous Metro character real well, but also be fucking crazy. I picked Evan Peters.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can see that. He was in Kick-Ass?
Yeah, it says he was.
Okay.
It says he was.
IMDb said it was, so it's true. On the internet, it's printed there. It's true.
Right on.
Nice.
Sean, Bruno?
All right, so wanted to go with someone who was socially awkward and a little weird, a little bit on the fringe. This actor is 33 years old. He was in John Wick, the first one.
Mm.
He was in The Predator. He was in The Other Boleyn Girl. And he was in Game of Thrones as Theon Greyjoy. I went with Alfie Allen.
Alfie Allen almost made it into our Battle Royale today.
Oh, wow.
But he didn't. All right, I like it, man. I can see that. I went almost in an opposite direction. I was going with that, like, aggressively too familiar. And this guy definitely plays some aggressive characters. He is 60 now. He was in Platoon. He was in Point Break, the good one. He's in Office Space. And he's also on a TV show called Stan vs. Evil. But everybody knows him as Dr. Cox from Scrubs. I just thought that was a good face value pick, and then I built off of there.
What's his name? McGinley.
John C. McGinley.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we've got Ann Morton, the love interest and daughter of the senator, sister to Barbara, played by Ruth Roman. She was 29 at the time. And it's going to be apparent here with my recast that I was recasting the wrong role. I was recasting the cheating wife as opposed to the sister.
I see.
Go ahead, Chelsea, with your Ann Morton.
My actress is 23, and this role, Ann Morton, is really poised, kind of has it all together, but still has this like nice girl quality about her. And my actress was in This Is 40, Knocked Up, Funny People. Most recently, you can see her on Euphoria. I went with Maude Apatow.
Oh, nice.
Maude.
And Sean, you're Ann Morton.
I went with an actress who's 27 years old, who I think is rather pretty and has a little bit of the poise that you speak of. I first noticed her in the movie School of Rock, but she's been in the Despicable Me films as a voice part. She was in the Nickelodeon show iCarly. I went with Miranda Cosgrove.
Miranda Cosgrove. Okay. Right on. My actress is a little bit older. She is 52 now.
Right.
She was in Bringing Out the Dead with Nicolas Cage. She was in A Very Muppet Christmas. She was in that weird Tom Hanks movie, The Circle. And also, she was in Scrubs. Her name is Judy Reyes.
Oh, my. Oh, wow.
So.
There's that.
Obviously, strong recommend on the film.
Yes.
Weak recommend on the recast.
Well, wait until you see my mini movie and you realize that I was... not recasting the sister.
I'm just kidding. It's cool.
All right. So let's go ahead and bring it into intermission. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and go off half-cocked and get hitched. All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis. And I just have one question for you, Sean. What is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under review.
Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it and multiply.
A Podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show, don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
All right. Thank you very much, Chop Shoppers, for bearing with us during intermission. We are back now. And what do we like to do when we come back, Sean?
Beer check-ins.
And what beers do you have to check in today?
It's nothing unusual, nothing special. I've got some fresh cans of Pixels from Seminar Brewing, seminarbrewing.com. And I have Founders All Day IPA Session Ale.
good session beer.
Mm-hmm.
And they're called that because you can drink them all day long. I was drinking, it's not really worth mentioning, but the Lidl has their own brand of IPA, and they had a pineapple one called Bandito Pineapple IPA. It was not great, but it was what it lacked in flavor and sophistication, it had in alcohol.
Nice.
Okay.
All right. So now let's go into the 2020 movie marathon, right?
Yes.
And this is where Sean and I and Chelsea and whoever else wants to participate try to watch as many movies as we can that are new to us throughout the calendar year. The goal being this year, 366, because it is a leap year. And it is the 136th day of the year today.
Okay.
What number are you guys on?
I'm on 129.
Right on. Knocked out four more this week.
I'm on 182.
Respectable pace there. I'm still 11 ahead of you though, Sean.
You're crushing it.
And we check these in, we check them with the hashtag 2020 movie marathon on Twitter. And what is your first check-in going to be today?
I'm going to continue the Alfred Hitchcock thing, and I'm going to go ahead and check in the second, The Man Who Knew Too Much. This is the 1956 version starring Jimmy Stewart.
Okay.
And who else is in this?
Doris Day, shut up. Don't even pretend.
It's interesting to see how Hitchcock expands the narrative. The first one was an hour and 15 minutes. This one's a 2-hour film. So neat to see him kind of stretch the story and fill in some holes in the narrative. But I was very disappointed to see him take the role of the hero away from Doris Day's character. Very typically 1950s thing to do, I would say. Jimmy Stewart is actually the hero in this film. And it kind of left me a little disappointed.
It would have been so cool if they would have had her do that after that rendition of Que Sera, because that was just the most tortured version of that song I have ever heard.
Yeah, just to let the listeners know that they're in this particular version, it's their son that's been abducted by the bad guys, and they're in the same building as their son. They don't know where he's being held, and so Doris Day had a thing where she would sing Que Sera, Sera, and her son would whistle along. And so she's singing it very loudly. They asked her to sing because she's a famous musician. And she's singing it very loudly in hopes that her son will hear it and they'll get a ping as to where he is located in the building. And sure enough, he does. And Jimmy Stewart goes off and looks for him and locates him. So anyway, there you go.
All right, cool deal. My next check-in, or my first check-in for this week, is going to be number 185, and it's called The Goldfinch. And it's a 2019 movie based on a book that I did not read, but my lovely wife Michelle did drink. It's a great story, and Ansel Elgort is really good, but Oakes Fagley steals the show. So the story is that on the day of a museum visit with his mom, the main character is there, and his mom walks off into a certain area of the art gallery or the museum, and right at that moment a bomb goes off and people are killed. There's carnage everywhere, and somehow in the aftermath of that, this old man who he had seen just before with his granddaughter convinces him to take a painting that has fallen off the wall. And the painting is The Goldfinch. And the kid immediately takes it home. And this is really early on in the story. And it shows him protecting this painting throughout his life. And it was really good. It was a good movie to watch with my wife because she had already had that appreciation of the book it was based on. And I won't really spoil anymore. Oh, Finn Woodward is in it too. Finn Woodward is playing like a Russian foreign exchange student. And his character comes into play later as well.
Who's Finn Woodward?
Finn Woodward from Stranger Things.
I thought it was Finn Wolfhard.
What did I say?
Woodward.
Oh yeah, Wolfhard. That guy.
That guy. Hey, yeah. That guy.
Who's Finn Woodard?
Chelsea, do you have a check-in?
No, I'm just kind of bouncing off everyone else's.
Okay, groovy. I'm going to check in Arkansas.
Okay, yes.
The new film. Clark Duke is a force to be reckoned with, in my opinion. He was co-writer, director, and producer on this movie.
Was he in it?
Oh, yeah.
I love him.
He's co-stars with Chris Hemsworth, who puts on a
dirty mustache.
What'd you say?
He's got a dirty mustache.
Yeah, Clark does.
Yeah.
But Chris Hemsworth plays, he puts on a believable, authentic Southern accent.
Uh-huh.
And also in the film, who did I say she was, the young lady? Oh, she's Josh Brolin's daughter.
Yeah, that was surprising. Really?
Oh, man, she's beautiful.
And now, now that you mentioned that, looking at her face, you can definitely tell.
Yeah. And then... who else is in this film? What's his face? Old sweaty face.
Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, it's a Southern mafia type movie. They're drug brothers.
To be fair, his character is named Frog.
Frog. Perfect casting. And I do love the flashback sequences with Frog's 1990s Navajo inspired shirts.
Oh yeah.
Lots of ties. Yeah, a lot, and the bolo ties, of course. Yeah.
Yeah,
so it's worth checking out. It's a cool film.
I kind of enjoyed it too. My next one is going to be a documentary that I saw on Netflix, and it's all about people's first experience with psychedelics. Most of the stories are about LSD, but they're all well-known people, celebrities. I'm just looking at the cover here. Ad Rock, Adam Scott, ASAP Rocky, they're in alphabetical order apparently, and Ben Stiller. Oh, that's what I wanted to say. There's a segment where he talks about his first trip and calling his dad. I thought that was very fitting, considering he's our RIP this week. All kinds of people, David Cross, Donovan, Lewis Black, Nick Offerman is almost like the host, Nick Kroll, Paul Scheer, Reggie Watts, Rob Corddry, Sarah Silverman, the list goes on. So that's it's of course they do the obligatory animation sequences.
Yes.
Sometimes, and then sometimes they reenact each other, which is funny.
Yeah, that was funny. I think that Rob Corddry plays Paul Scheer and Paul Scheer plays Rob Corddry.
That was perfect. It was so funny.
Yeah, so I enjoyed that. It's a recommend.
Super. My final check-in for the day is going to be a film that dropped today on digital download. It's Scoob.
Scoob.
The new CGI Scooby-Doo movie. It's got a great cast of voice actors, people that you recognize. You'll find yourself listening going, who is that?
Does Matthew Lillard reprise his role?
No, he does not. Will Arnett plays the role of Shaggy.
What about Casey Kasem?
Not Will Arnett.
He's...
Wait a minute.
Will Forte.
Will Forte. Thank you.
He would make a better Shaggy.
You think Will Arnett would make a better? Anyway.
Will Forte would make a better Shaggy. Will Arnett would make a better, what's his fuck?
But some of the voice acting, Fred. Great.
Fred.
Yeah. Fred was played by Zac Efron.
Oh, that works.
But not to belabor it too much, you can look them up. But in my review, though, I said I think we can all agree that the world needs more Captain Caveman voiced by Tracy Morgan.
Oh, hell yes.
The movie is worth watching just to see Tracy Morgan's voice coming out of Captain Caveman's body.
I'm sold. I was on the fence before, but I'm sold now.
It's entertaining. It's entertaining enough for adults. I think kids will love this movie. There's a lot of fun for kids in this.
All right. I've got one more. I'm calling an audible here. I'm changing my mind about what I was going to talk about. This one is called, it was originally titled Fonzo, but they changed the title before releasing it to Capone. And it stars Tom Hardy as Al Capone. Now, on the surface, you think, hey, Tom Hardy's got experience playing a gangster. You know, he can get big or he can be menacing and intimidating. But then upon watching the movie, I realized that, no, it is a portrayal of his later syphilitic-ridden life as he deteriorates as a human being, which I guess kind of makes a makes for a more interesting story because the Al Capone story has been told so many times.
Yep.
So I didn't strongly recommend it because there it was a little bit disturbing in some parts. Scatologically? No. incontinently. I think I gave it 3.5 stars. Tom Hardy's always good,
but he talks like this around the whole movie.
Now, didn't he want to be called Snorky? Wasn't that what Capone wanted his nickname to be?
I don't know. That sounds familiar, but it seems like, don't call me Fonzo, it's Snorky. All right, we're going into the second part of our feature segment, which is the recast continued.
Part two.
Recast continued is going to be North by Northwest from 1959. It's got a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. That 1% that they took away was just for Cary Grant's Technicolor tan. Directed, of course, by the great Alfred Hitchcock. Classic suspense film finds New York ad executive Roger Thornhill, played by Cary Grant, pursued by a ruthless spy named Philip Van Damme, played by James Mason, after Thornhill is mistaken for a government agent. Hunted relentlessly by Van Damme's associate, whose name is Leonard, and he's played by Martin Landau, the harried Thornhill ends up on a cross-country journey, meeting the beautiful and mysterious Eve Kendall, played by Eva Marie Saint, along the way. Soon, Van Damme's henchmen close in on Thornhill, resulting in a number of iconic action sequences. In some of the advertisements for this, Alfred Hitchcock would come out and say that he was president of a travel agency, and he was going to take the audience on a tour of all these iconic settings.
And he does.
Of course, the couple that stand out in particular are the plane in the cornfield.
Yeah, the crop duster.
Chased down by the crop duster. And then also the villain's lair is on top of Mount Rushmore.
Of course.
Which is so silly.
It's very silly.
It's almost like James Bond level of silly. They might as well have like had to climb in through Lincoln's nose or something. But what else do we need to say about the movie, Sean?
There are some really cool things that happen in the film. My favorite of which was the introduction. It might not have been an introduction, but the use of the airplane noise when Cary Grant's talking to the professor about what's really going on.
Uh-huh.
The airplane kind of on the runway kind of goes by and drowns out their dialogue. So the audience doesn't know what they're saying to each other,
cool.
Which is really, there's some key information about the plot, including who's who and what's what.
I really liked it. It was weird that it took place on Mount Rushmore because that's not really an iconic thing. I grew up in South Dakota and we make fun of it.
If you start in Florida, it is in a north northwestern direction.
Yeah, it's just weird. The first time I saw it, I was like 4 and I looked at my mom and I was like, oh my God, the Flintstones. So there's that.
Mount Rushmore was the Flintstones.
That's what I thought.
Oh.
It's not as big as you think it is either. It's pretty small.
They are made of stone.
That's what she said.
All right, so let's get into our roles that we're going to recast, right?
Yes.
We've got Roger Thornhill, played by Cary Grant, who was 55 at the time. We've got Eve Kendall, played by Eva Marie Saint. And I think that I read that the producers wanted somebody else for this, but he insisted on her. Alfred Hitchcock did. Then we've got the spy, Philip Van Damme, who's smuggling microfilm inside of antiquities.
Yeah.
Played by James Mason, who was 50. And then we've got his henchman, Leonard, played by Martin Landau, who was 31 at the time. And then due to it, just a little bit more lack of communication on our part, you're going to be doing a bonus of the professor, right?
That's right.
All right. Sounds good. Chelsea, do you want to start us off with your Roger Thornhill?
Sure. I'm not proud of this pick. Originally, I had picked Dermot Mulroney, but I was like, he's not he's not cool enough. He's not polished enough.
So you picked Dylan McDermott?
No, I didn't. My actor was in Million Dollar Arm, Baby Driver, The Town, somebody I really don't like, and I have used him before, but he is cool, and he is handsome.
And he's an ad man?
He is an ad man.
He's an ad man and a madman. Say the name again, Chelsea.
John Hamm.
John Hamm. And you were very recently talking about how much you hated him. And I could tell when you were saying that you picked him that there was a little tremble on your lip.
He's a dick, but he's got swagger when he acts.
True, true. Next up, Sean, you're Roger Thornhill.
There's only one actor, in my opinion, who
you better not.
Who can be cast as a Cary Grant.
How old is he?
He's 59.
Okay, all right.
He likes airplanes, for sure, and travel, as seen in the film Up in the Air. He was in a very Alfred Hitchcocky, stylish kind of film, The American. And what else? He was in Catch 22. Fuck it. It's George Clooney.
I thought he was 55.
He's 59.
Bad math on my part. It makes more sense. I also picked George Clooney. You might know him from Dusk Till Dawn, Ocean's 11, Batman and Robin, and the TV show ER.
Yeah, he's our Cary Grant. I mean, he's one of the most charming people.
Yeah.
Didn't he have a recurring role on like a early 80s sitcom?
He was on Facts of Life. Facts
of Life, thank you.
Yeah, after they opened the little gift shop thing, he was their shop boy.
Yeah, when Sean was talking about, oh, there's only one actor, I knew immediately who it was, and I was like, well, shit, I can't pick that. Mm-hmm. And I struggled with this role.
Yeah, I would have yelled at you sooner, but I thought he was 4 years younger than that.
your John Hamm was my second pick.
Well, right. And that's, yeah.
Where do you go after that, though?
I don't know.
That's a tough
one. You can't. I tried. Right. It didn't work.
Eve Kendall is the, is she the honeypot? No, what is she? She's a
double agent.
A double agent, yes. And they fall in love awfully quick.
Very quick.
Well, we are talking about Cary Grant, so.
Yeah, true.
It's true. So Chelsea, who's your pick for this one?
Eve is kind of a smooth talker in this movie. And I picked this actress because I love the sound of her voice. It's got a little bit of a rasp to it. And she's also really pretty and kind of a plain Jane way, but I won't say that she's a plain Jane.
You just did. But,
well, whatever. She was in John Tucker Must Die. The Hitcher, and she was on the TV show One Tree Hill. I went with Sophia Bush.
Okay. Sean, you're Eve Kendall?
I went with a 42-year-old actress to Eva Marie Saint's 35.
And F you because you win.
It was happenstance, though, because I made this pick on a face value because she looks just like her.
She really does.
But ironically, she was born in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Oh,
and that's all I needed to know, and I knew immediately who it was.
She was in Dirty Dancing, Havana Nights. She was in X-Men First Class.
Uh-huh.
She was in Unknown with Liam Neeson. Ironically, we were just talking about Will Forte. She was in The Last Man on Earth, but most people will know her from Mad Men. I went with January Jones.
Ah, okay. January Jones. Very good. Yeah, I could see that, man. I could really see it. She's got that kind of classiness. My actress is even older. She's 54 now, which is comparable to Cary Grant's 55, you know, a little bit closer than the 20-year age gap they had.
Yep.
She is in a movie called The Family Man with Nicolas Cage. She's also in not Armageddon, but Deep Impact. She was in... Oh, speaking of plain Jane, she was in Fun with Dick and Jane. She's also had a good run on Madam Secretary, and she knows how to deal with a super charming man because she was married to David Duchovny. It's Taya Leone.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I like that.
I don't know. Are they still married or did they split up because of his sex addiction?
I'm pretty sure they got divorced because of it.
And while he was like in rehab for sex addiction, he was also on that show Californication, in which his character was a sex addict.
Fucking and punching.
So yeah. That was counterintuitive, I think, therapeutically. Next up, we've got Philip Van Damme, the spy, the evil spy, the bad guy. And he was played by James Mason, who was 50 at the time. And Chelsea, how did you feel about this one?
So towards the end of the movie, when Eve takes the statue away from him and gets in the car with Cary Grant, he looks at Leonard and he's like, get the figure from her.
Uh-huh.
The figure?
He says it like that. And I was like, oh my God, I know exactly who I want to use because okay. I want him to have a stupid fucking accent. And so I went with Sacha Baron Cohen.
That's good. That's real good.
Yes.
Beat that, Sean.
Well, James Mason is just a cad in this movie. And it was that full of himself attitude that he carried from start to finish that kind of got me thinking of my recast. And he's kind of played this part before in some of his lesser roles. But most people will know him from the Saw franchise.
Hmm.
Also, Kiss the Girls, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and The Princess Bride. I went with Cary Elwes.
Nice. John Elway's brother.
Yes. Super Bowl winner, Cary Elwes. Awesome.
Yeah, I like that a lot. He was on something very recently.
He was a bastard in it.
Yeah, for sure.
He's a good villain.
It wasn't American Gods, is it?
You're probably thinking of his role as the shitty mayor in Stranger Things season 2.
Yes. Yes, that is correct. All right. Well, my pick then, my Philip Van Damme is also 50 now. He was in Sherlock Holmes, the Robert Downey Jr. one. He's in Hancock, the Will Smith one. Atomic Blonde, the Charlize Theron one. And he's also the brother who runs the boxing ring on the show, Ray Donovan. His name's Eddie Marsan. Eddie Marsan.
Gotcha.
As soon as we're done here, I'm going to send you my visuals.
Nice.
All right. We got one more, right?
Yes.
Yes.
We've got Leonard the Henchman, played by Martin Landau. And for a split second, I was really excited because I thought that Martin Landau, once again, I mistakenly thought that he was Alfred in the 1980s Batmans.
Nope.
So that was something Goff, Stephen Goff. Martin Landau, though, was only 31 at the time and would go on to a much longer career, lots of things that I can't remember right now. And who is going to be your actor for this role, the henchman Leonard, Chelsea?
He has a very unique looking face.
Very much
in this movie. And I immediately thought of this actor when I looked at him, and he's a little bit older, but he has a very unique face. I went with Adrian Brody.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could see that for sure. And he sure does have that kind of elongated face.
Yes.
Okay. Sean, what are you thinking about?
All right. So this one was done on the fly, but I had the picture of this actor's face when I was watching the film, and I'm glad that we are recasting this. I didn't think we were. My actor is 27 years old. He's got very angular features. He's very awkward and kind of out of step with society, which I think Martin Landau's character seems like he was not quite right. Oh. So this actor was in It's a Funny Kind of Story, and he was in a TV series called Atypical. And he was in It Follows. His name is Keir Gilchrist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Your visual.
Yep.
Like, it's driving me crazy, and it finally came to me.
So Martin Landau was on Mission Impossible, and he also played the Bela Lugosi role in Ed Wood.
Right. Didn't he win the Oscar for that?
I think he may have.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Is it my turn?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so this actor is 42 now. He's had small parts in a few movies like The Big Short, also The Angriest Man in Brooklyn, and he was recently in a movie that I watched with Christina Ricci called 10 Things We Need to Do Before We Break Up. And while I was watching it, I told Michelle, I was like, this guy looks like a young Anthony Bourdain. Like he should play Bourdain in the inevitable biopic.
That was in your review too.
Yes. And his name is Hamish Linklater. Oh, he also plays Clark Debussy on Legion. That is my pick for that. And then we got one more, right, Sean?
Well, it's a bonus pick because of confusion. Yeah, the professor, the secret agent, head honcho that kind of makes contact with Cary Grant to kind of let him know what's going on. So I thought of an 81-year-old actor to Leo Carroll's 73. I went with a guy who has been in The Grand Budapest Hotel, Mighty Aphrodite, Amadeus, but it was his role as Dar Adal in Homeland, the handler. I went with F. Murray Abraham.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He kind of reeks of that. You don't know if you can trust him or not kind of guy. Oh, by the way, he's also in that new show with Danny Pudi called Mythic Quest on Apple TV.
Okay. Cool. So that answers my next question about whether or not he's still alive.
Oh, he's still alive, and he plays a sleazy sci-fi writer who's the writer for The Game. And he's completely just, he's like a dirty old man. And it's really funny to see him in a comedy role.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here and say recommends all around for North by Northwest.
Absolutely.
This was my first time having seen it in its entirety. And yes. I was pretty blown away.
It's a cool movie. It is so freaking cool.
It's fun.
And it holds up very well.
Yeah.
Except for that Technicolor tan. The bonus segment is once again going to be a battle royale. Are you guys ready for it?
Go.
Ready.
I may have given you a clue a moment ago, but today's battle royale is going to be a battle to the death between the following people in their prime. Of course, the man of the hour, Alfred Hitchcock, versus Alfred Pennyworth, versus Alfred Matthew Yankovic.
Weird Al.
He's an Alfred.
It's Weird Al Yankovic.
Alfred Matthew Yankovic to his mother.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say it. Alfred Pennyworth.
Okay.
Because Alfred Pennyworth in his prime he was a badass. He was in the British Special Forces. And he is a badass. He can kick ass. And he has repeatedly on Batman's various incarnations.
Yep.
So that's my pick.
Good job. Chelsea.
I'm going to go with Alfred Hitchcock.
Alfred Hitchcock, because after all, this is his episode.
It is.
He's going to do it through like subterfuge and intrigue.
Yeah. I mean, he seems like he's a smart dude.
And he surrounds himself with beautiful actresses.
Yeah. He's going to like get somebody else to do it and they're not even going to realize it.
Well, I'm glad that we can give him the credit he deserves posthumously. I, to be the odd man out, am going to go Weird Al. I got to see him perform live a couple years ago, and he's going to completely confuse everyone by changing costumes every other line.
That seems fair.
Is he going to wear the fat suit?
Of course, dude. Did you hear about the celebrities doing sing-alongs to Weird Al's Eat It?
Yes, I saw that.
That was pretty funny. Let's wrap it up, huh?
Yeah, let's go home.
All right. We want to thank the guest. Chelsea, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Anything that you would like to plug this week?
Yes. I would like to give a huge, huge, huge thank you to the Cinema Chop Shop seminar, just my crowd in general, for participating in a birthday parade for my son last Saturday.
Oh, that is nice. And I appreciate the sentiment, but I'm just going to stop you right there. You can't call it your crowd.
It's my crowd.
I want to thank the engineer, my co-host and co-producer, Sean, the Brew Boss. What do you want to plug this week?
I'll just keep plugging sanitation while you reintegrate into society, because looks like we're starting to mix our odors again in public. Seminar Brewing is open. We had indoor seating and people still elected to sit outside because it's still nice out, which I really like and appreciate. But
yeah, I worked Saturday. Since our last recording, I worked Saturday in the beer garden, and it was awesome. Yeah, get the breeze blowing through there.
Yeah, I think we're headed for warm temperatures this weekend, so that might be the end of that.
What is next week's episode, Sean?
The films of John C. Reilly.
Hell yeah. For our season 7 premiere, we're going to be talking about the next generation's Gene Hackman. The films of John C. Reilly.
I said, I think that Allie may be making an appearance on the episode if she can.
Oh, this awesome. Is
one of her favorite actors.
Very cool. And did you see the movies that we're recasting? I think you're going to like them.
I don't think either of them are familiar to me.
The only one I can remember right now is Heartache, and it's amazing.
Yeah, these are new to me. Yeah, totally. Well, I'm sorry. The second one is not new to me. The other one, Heartache, is unknown to me.
It's awesome. In addition to having worked with Leonardo DiCaprio in The Aviator, John C. Reilly also worked with two other actors who played Howard Hughes. Who were they?
Jesus.
Do you need more of a clue?
No clue, man. I mean, I have no clue. Go ahead.
All right. So these other two actors who played Howard Hughes played him in movies that did not feature John C. Reilly, but he's also appeared with them in other films. The first one is in the movie Melvin and Howard from 1980. John C. Reilly also appeared with this actor in Magnolia. The second is from The Amazing Howard Hughes from 1977. And John C. Reilly appeared with this actor in A Prairie Home Companion.
I'm still completely at a loss.
Chelsea?
I have no idea.
In 1980, Jason Robards played Howard Hughes in Melvin and Howard and would also appear in Magnolia. And in 1977, Tommy Lee Jones played the amazing Howard Hughes. Mm-hmm. And he would also appear in A Prairie Home Companion.
With I love that movie.
Next week, John C. Reilly. I like the movie too, and I really liked the show, but it hasn't aged well, considering Garrison Keillor.
No, it just it reminds me of home with the accents.
Yeah, absolutely. So we want to plug the podcast itself. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on whatever podcatcher app you are hearing us on. We're hosted online on Podbean. We're Cinema Chop Shop on there. On Twitter, we're at Cinema Chop Shop. Facebook is facebook.com/cinemachopshop. And our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. The beers that we checked in today, we'll check them in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Did you see I actually checked them in last week?
I did.
I did a good job. Finally, we want to thank you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in, and please remember to watch, chop, retrofit.
And tip your Hitchcocks.